Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Cripescast. I'm your host, Charlie Behrens. This is the podcast where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest. We're brought to you by Jolly Good Soda. And here is today's episode. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Cripescast. Today we are talking with Paul Verzi. Funny dude. The first time I was introduced to Paul was through his podcast with Bill Burr. I loved him then, and then reached out because my buddy Tom said, Tom Lawler, shout out Tom, he said, Paul's going to be in London when you're in London, because he's a Giants fan. I'm obviously a Packers fan, and the Giants beat the Packers. I don't want to talk about it. So we reached out to Paul. He was like, I'm there with my family, but finally we connected, and I had so much fun in this podcast. Love Paul. Great stand-up comedian. You should check his stuff out. Joined today in this intro by the fearless executive producer of the Cripescast, Colleen Maraca. Colleen, how are we living?
We're living great. It's a Friday. We're recording this early.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing makes me more excited in this entire world than being proactive about the Cripescast.
Yes, exactly. What are you doing for your weekend, Colleen? Colleen is a Generation Z.
Okay.
Gal.
What about it?
Well, I mean, I'm old millennial. Yeah. Just seeing how your weekend's gonna compare to mine. What are you doing this weekend?
Well, this weekend you have fun stuff going on. You're gonna be in Chicago doing Zanies.
I didn't say I didn't have fun stuff. I just said, you know, I want to see what you're doing.
So you asked me so that we would talk about you.
No, I didn't.
Okay.
No, you brought me into this. I was literally trying to pretend to care. And nice. That's what I get
that's
for pretending
what
to care. No, seriously, what are you doing?
Tonight, my friends and I are going to go to Deer District and watch the Bucks. Yeah. We're going to try to get tickets to the game, but just so expensive. Yeah. They're playing the Lakers, so it's going to be like a fun...
This madhouse prices. Yeah. That place gets so expensive.
Yeah.
So fast.
Yeah.
But it's great. Love it. Yeah. Whenever I get free tickets... I'm
hit
there.
Me up. What the hell?
Yeah.
That's not fair.
Yeah, I will. Brent's got tickets.
Okay, so. Yeah, no, so I'm going to, we don't know yet, but we're going to go to Deer District. Our kickball team, I think, is getting together.
And congratulations.
And then tomorrow, I don't know, the girls that I live by, we're all hanging out doing some sort of like Christmas stuff. I got a Christmas shop. And I also have to figure out the cockroach situation in my apartment.
Oh, yeah. You have a cockroach.
Yeah.
Your horse.
Yeah, my new pet horse.
Your pet horse. Thing's so big.
Yeah.
Well, not anymore. Now it's dead. Okay.
That's my...
good. You got a weekend plan. What else do we have to mention in this intro for the folks? Oh, Christmas is here. Oh, sorry. All right.
No, take it away.
Yeah, it's such a man of you to ask me what else we have to talk about and talk over me. Colleen, what do we have to talk about?
Was she silenced or was she silenced?
Oh, God.
I'm kidding.
I love how you can laugh at yourself so good.
Anyway, we have Christmas stuff, so make sure you order by this Friday, by the
order
time this
off.
Podcast comes out.
Where off
ManTalkMinute.com.
Or Cripescast.com.
Or Cripescast.com. Hit the merch.
It's all made in the U.S.
Yep. And the reason we say order by Friday, first of all, it's just, you know, supply chain, all that jazz. Make sure that you're just ordering ahead of time so that you get your favorite Watch Out for Deer, Keep Her Moving, Tell Your Folks I Says Hi merch to you so that you can wrap it real good for the person you're giving it to for the holidays.
Heck yeah. I don't wrap anything. I don't wrap.
That doesn't surprise
anything.
Me. This, you've never, any gift that you've given me, usually over email. Or like.
That's not true. I give you a gift for your birthday in an envelope.
That was the most like, I laughed so hard at that.
Why?
That just was like the goofiest, most mafia way I've ever received a gift in my life.
All right, relax. All right.
Okay.
I wrote a heartfelt letter in that. You know.
My favorite thing too about your letters, if you do that. All of them that I've ever got have been on like a piece of printer paper and a Sharpie.
Yeah, that's my stationery. Okay. This is bullshit. You know, this is why I should just not give gifts. I'll give you a signed beer can next time. Some people would really like that as a gift.
I like go to the extremes and get ribbon and I curl the ribbon.
Oh, crap. And I appreciate the art form.
Yeah. It's okay.
I'm not there yet.
It's okay. And you don't have to be. There's.
Imagine if I spend more. Well.
No, you don't need to. That's not true. It's not about the presentation, I suppose.
No, it's about how much is in that envelope. All right, let's leave it there. As they say on the news when they can't think of anything else to say, it is now time, ladies and gentlemen, for my guest, Paul Verzi. How you doing, man?
Good. How are you, bud?
Doing good. What's what you been up to?
I have been just, you know, running around trying to get the, excuse my little congestion, my whole house.
Did your kids catch something and then you caught from your kids?
Dude, everybody in my, it's weird. It's like everybody in my neighborhood's got something. It's just like a, it's not COVID or anything. It's just like a, you know, plus when you have little kids, man, they bring it home and it's just, I get it. Every time my daughter gets sick, I get it.
Yeah. Yeah. I got nieces and nephews and kind of the same thing. I'm like, oh, that's an interesting, you'd think we would have caught all this, but they've got these novel, and I probably shouldn't say novel because then someone's going to say that's some like conspiracy thing, but they got some interesting viruses, as the kids do. I don't know where they get them.
It's because their immune system's weaker. But other than that, man, everything's going good, man. Working on the new hour. The special on Netflix, dude, was trending globally.
Special's hilarious.
Oh, thank you, man. It's doing. I appreciate you, man. It's doing so well, and we're gonna get another boost because I think I made the best of 22 of Netflix specials. So what they do is,
congrats.
They put a special out on New Year's Eve. And it's 2 minutes of every special that they put out in 22. That's like that was a top one. So it'll get another boost. And hopefully that 2 minutes will drive people to the special again. So, but I'm just on the road running around trying to get the new hour. Cause that's really, you know, what it is. One thing I learned about this whole thing is that you have to, so my special came out the end of, almost the beginning of July, like June 23rd, right?
Yeah.
A week later, I'm booked in San Diego, and I just can't do any material from it. Or let me say this, I refuse to do any material from it.
Yeah.
And that's nerve wracking, because then that brings you back to like in your hotel room, writing stuff down. I hope this works. I got to rebuild it. But luckily, I got to an hour plus, didn't touch 1 minute of it, and it went real well. So now I'm building off of that blueprint. So that's kind of where I'm at. But I feel like I'm in a good place, man, because I'm just like not caring about anybody's thoughts of what I'm doing except believing in what my thought process is, if that makes sense.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, that is that's tough because you now release your special. It's hilarious. And you can't use any of that material that you spent. How much time do you spend on that material?
So that material, I was probably about a year or so in, and then pandemic hit. But the pandemic hitting, Charlie, was a blessing. And the reason why it was a blessing was because during that time, I got COVID so early on. Me and my family got COVID so early. So I had antibodies and I'm talking like week of lockdown, like I got it.
You were one of the first ones.
I didn't know. Yeah, me and there's a comedian, Michael Yo, who was like, he was like paging zero.
And he was sick as hell. He came on the podcast. He was telling me about that.
Yeah, he could have been like, he was like in really, really rough shape. I was like a week after him. We didn't know anything. I didn't know if I'd end up in a hospital like he did. I stayed in my guest room, but that allowed me to get antibodies and then go to places that had like 50% capacity. I was in Arizona, Texas, you know, places that didn't believe in it.
Yeah.
You know, so then what happened was the hours started getting better. So while everybody's sitting at home and nobody's doing anything, I felt like my training and my hour of that special got to a place that I wanted it to. So then once things lightened up with pandemic, I had a better hour, and then I worked it for a little bit, like 9 more months, and then we shot it. So it worked out.
That's great. And then you shot it. Now, in the time when you shot it and you were doing stand-up after that, right?
Yeah.
Were you already going full new hour? Or were you just doing the same hour, trying to integrate new stuff into the old hour? Like, yes. How did you transition? Is that how you transitioned?
The latter. Okay. So basically it was like After I shot it and it was in the can, I would go out and I would do as much new stuff as I could. Mm-hmm. What also happened, though, it's actually a really great question, because what also happened was some of the bits of the special got better after I shot it.
Doesn't that piss you off?
I remember talking to Shane Gillis about his, and he goes, man, I wish I shot mine now. And I'm like, I get that, because now I'm like, oh, dude, I could have added that piece to the special, but whatever, you know, hindsight's whatever. That's gonna happen, right?
I think also the thing to learn from that, because I shot my special, I haven't released it yet, and I feel the same way about some bits. I think the thing to remember is just you like let go so much when whatever you can do to get yourself to that mental place of letting go when you're shooting your special.
Yes.
It's almost like I wish I shot my special as sort of like a test run. And then and then there's always one show that you don't shoot, you don't do anything, and you absolutely murder it. And you're like, that should have been the special.
I'm not a comedian that's good with going back ever to anything. Like, I'll give you an example. One of the clubs, actually both clubs in New York City, like that I do a lot, would be the Cellar and the Stand. Yeah. And they'd go, hey, we're doing something tonight and we're taping. And I'm like, I can't tape anything. I can't burn anything. And they're like, no, just do some old stuff. I'm out. I can't.
Yeah.
Like, once it's done with me, sometimes, Charlie, I don't remember the joke. Dude, if somebody literally said to me, can you go and do some jokes from your album? I don't know it. I don't know it. You know,
you put it in that muscle memory, you get it going, like, to where you don't even have to be thinking necessarily. But then as soon as you're putting your brain in that place of thinking, as opposed to maybe you find it again, you know, but yeah, it's just, it's not in there. Certainly not going to be as good as what it was. So what's the point of filming it?
You know, I was in Michigan a couple months back. And there's a woman in the crowd. And she's like, oh my God, we're big fans. We're here for you. And I'm thinking, oh, that's so awesome. And I'm thinking that they saw the special.
Yeah.
The Netflix special. And she goes, I'm here because of your St. Peter at the Pearly Gates joke from my Comedy Central special. She goes, and she yells, I hope you do it. and I say to her, I go, ma'am, I don't even like, I appreciate that. Right. So anyway, I do my whole set. I do like an hour 15. And she's like looking, and then I just go, you know, I was about to leave, and I go, all right, hold on, man, I'm going to try this for you. And like the place went nuts, and she was like, oh my God. And I probably nailed like 85% of it.
Yeah.
Like as far as like, and the 15% I didn't nail might've been little things here and there, or like maybe the extended version, but I got the gist of it. And she left like, oh my God, I'm so happy. But I'm not good with that, dude. Like when it's behind me, it's behind me.
Yeah, no, I get that. And it also, like, it's better to be that way than to be the person, like, so hard on, or so, like, into their one, you know, some comics back in the day, it used to be they would do the same hour for years and years, for a decade even, you know? And so to continue getting yourself in that mental space where you're just churning and burning. I mean, there's so much demand, too, for new hours and everything. When's your next hour coming? Do you know?
Yeah, exactly. Like I think I don't understand. I know, never like to judge anybody, and I never know what anybody's path or journey is in comedy, in their life, in their career. But I don't understand the people that 20 years doing the same set, man. It's like, are you doing this to just pay your bills, dude? Right. It's like, you know what I mean? It's like, for me, the whole thing was to evolve and see how good and how much better I could get and be one of the guys that people are like, wow, like every time I saw him or I saw an hour he put out, it was better and he was better and evolved. And when you see people that just stay here, you're kind of like, oh, maybe their whole thing was to get as much money with that hour and this and pay their rent. But I can't do that.
Yeah. Yeah. And no, it's also like people, I think, get into this mental block of like where like they just don't trust the laughs are going to be there, or that they've got. I don't know what it is. I felt myself there at certain times, and then it's almost a writer's block thing. And you sit down, you focus, and you're like, okay, that's 5 minutes. that's 10 minutes. You put it up on stage, you build more on stage, and then you're like, okay, now I'm at 40, 45. I can do this. You know, that's yeah. the kind of process for me. I'm like, shit, I can't. And then I just eventually do it. Takes a little getting there.
That's what it is. It's like we're harder in our heads. Like our head, in our minds, we'll make the obstacle of, oh my God, how am I going to? But if you get reps, you get it.
Yeah.
You know?
Where did you get your start? Like, what was your first time on stage? Where was that?
Well, actually, dude, my first time ever on stage was, I remember we talked about this when I was in like high school. And then a buddy of mine, it was like 1999. It was like 20 something years ago. But the only thing is in New York, I can't even count my first couple of years because you're barely doing it, dude.
Yeah.
You're doing like an open mic, like it was 6 minutes every like couple months. I mean, it was like, no, there was a bar. There was a bar, a famous bar in Woodstock, New York, and it was called Joyous Lake. And it was famous because all the bands that performed there in the 60s at Woodstock, including the Stones and shit, they would go into this bar and like they would like work on their stuff and practice and stuff. It was a really known, famous bar called Joyous Lake in Woodstock, New York. And my buddy who worked construction walked past it one day on a Tuesday, and there was an open mic in there. And he just hit me up and goes, hey, dude, would you want to do this? It's like anybody with like whether it's music or poetry or comedy can do it. So I go, sign me up. So I went there. We drove with a couple friends and I had nothing written, Charlie. So I thought I could just go up there with like ideas. And I never did stand up before. So it was fucking horrible. I would be like, the cigarette pack says may cause cancer. It does cause cancer. Like it was no joke. Yeah. So it was like, you know. Yeah.
And, observations only.
And I remember I go, how come you never see Asian rappers, right? And I had nowhere to go with it. So luckily a drunk local started heckling, rapping like an Asian would.
Oh God.
And it actually helped me because I had nowhere to go.
Oh my God.
So I left. I was a little disappointed. I walked right up to the booker. And I said, put me on the list for next Tuesday right now. And then the next week I wrote 6 minutes, like my life depended on it. I knew it inside and out. I stayed in my bedroom, and then I went with a couple of carloads of friends, and the bar happened to be more packed that night. So by the time I went on stage, it was like busy. And dude, I killed for like 25 minutes, just killing, and maybe like 20 minutes. And I got off, and one of the locals goes, much better than last week. and I got really excited. So I started calling places in New York City for bringer shows after that. And then I got into New York Comedy Club, and that's pretty much how it started. But like I said, your first couple years in New York City, dude, it's like you can't really even. I would say I probably been going hard at this and really, really doing this from like 2003.
Yeah. And when you start doing the thing too in New York at that time, that's like it's a much different scene than today. Today it's like you got your podcast, you're doing your content, whatever. But then was the grind just, were you doing the barking or whatever? Were you like trying to get people in?
There was a comedy club called Ha Comedy Club, H-A, and it was right outside Times Square. And in order to get on stage, they gave you a handful of like these purple, blue, green, yellow tickets, and you'd have to go in Times Square and just hand them to tourists. And then at the end, you'd come back and you would go on stage and, you know, do all those things, man. Barking, bringer shows. You'd have to, New York Comedy Club had this thing back in the day where you had to bring 3 paid audience members on a Friday or Saturday. They'd give you 6 minutes, you know, and they tell you you'd go on at 9:30. You'd go on at 11:15. You're the people in there have been in there for a 3-hour show. And it was brutal, man. So I look back at all those things and I'm just going like, yeah, man, it prepares you, right?
Yeah, it does. It does. Who is your crew back in the day that you kind of came up with?
So when I first started, I was doing stuff with some Jersey guys. One guy's not in the business anymore, and a couple other guys are. Rodney Laney, who still does it. Bill Scully was a kid that came. But I was kind of a loner, dude. I would meet like one kid, and I'd see him, and then we would talk. Then we'd go on and then talk after our sets, and then I would go home because I was – and then that kid, I don't know if he still does it or he might do it, but like – and I also came up in the black rooms, the urban circuit. Mm-hmm. You know, they would be like, man, this white boy's funny. Put him up and stuff. But I was – I was unique in the way, like, now my crew is obviously, like, you know, Giannis, I'm cool with Joe, but Giannis Pappas, Joe Bartnick, Bill Burr, Bobby Kelly. Yeah. So a lot of my close friends are like a generation ahead. I would say maybe except for Giannis, but I was, you know, and they all, one thing that makes me feel good is they all got married and had families. I'm talking to my close friends and they say, because of me, you know, Bill Burr is like, dude, you made it look fun and okay. Giannis Pappas goes, dude, you
really?
Made me, yeah. Giannis Pappas goes, you made me realize I can do it. I'm married and I have a kid because of you. So those things make me feel good because I did it young, Charlie. So I was like, me and my wife have been together dating when I was 23, 24, and got married when I was 29 and had my son when I was 30 and my daughter when I was 33. So I was a guy in my late 20s, early 30s with a family. So these guys were, you know, we're all immature fucking comics, right?
Yeah.
And I'm down there and I'm doing shows and everyone's drinking, doing this. And I'd have like a beer and be like, no, dude, I got to be up with my baby tomorrow because my wife's got a job. So I was different in that sense where it wasn't like I couldn't hang out all the time. And I would always feel like I got to get down to the city and network and hang out. But I didn't all the time. I couldn't all the time.
Yeah, that whole, because I lived out in Los Angeles for a little bit when I was kind of first coming up in comedy. And there's that whole dynamic of like, of trying to network to get people to like you or to make friends, get on some shows. But I almost felt like there was too much attention on that and not enough attention on actually just doing good, like stand up and then people call you, you know? And I think I kind of fell into the trap of like not focusing on the art of it for a little bit and just trying to like get on shows, even though my stand up sort of sucked in the early years, you know?
Yeah, dude, totally. Like that's 100%. Like, dude, you nailed it because that's exactly right. It's like, you want to get down there and be in the mix with everybody. You know, I remember back in the day, they would be like, oh, you got to go drink with the execs of Comedy Central. They go to the after party, they hang out. And like, you would think that was more important or like you would go. But I remember the older, more experienced comics, some legendary comics would go, dude, just get undeniable. Like none of that matters. Like, and I realized, yes, it was good for them to know you and be on their radar. But the idea of hanging out and drinking till 3 o'clock in the morning and thinking that that's going to do anything for you as a comedian is crazy because at the end of the day, it's really what you do when they call your name with them on a big show and you grab the microphone and the crowd's watching you. That's really when people see that, you don't need to be out drinking with the executives.
Yeah, right.
You know, 100%. As a matter of fact, the executives are going to want to invite you out to go and drink with them because they were like, holy shit, this person's next. That's the difference. Does that make sense?
Totally. I forget where I was, but I saw this, it was like some walking trail. And you know, when they put the like inspirational quotes on a walking trail, I'm not sure if it was in Los Angeles or somewhere else, but it was some like hippie place like that. And it said, don't go chasing butterflies, make the best garden and the butterflies will come to you. And I was like, I hate how much I like this stupid ass sign right now, you know, but it's true. It's true. Like,
you're talking my language. I'm a sucker for a good corny saying, because here's the thing. All of those corny quotes, they all work. They're all real. And like, when you look at them, you're like, oh, that makes sense. And the funny thing about it is every great business person in the world, every great athlete in the world, all of their quotes, like it's the same. Like you notice how somebody writes a book and they're like a successful business person. They all say the same shit in their books, Charlie.
Yeah.
It's all the same shit. Like it's the blueprint is there.
Yeah.
And it's like, and it's all simple. Don't be a negative dickhead that just always, you know, shoots people down.
Yeah.
Stay in your own lane. Don't worry about what the next person's doing.
Yeah.
And one thing that I was always big on, and I always tell my children this, and people go, Paul, you know, I always remember you saying this. Short-term and long-term goals, dude. You know, a lot of these comics, they go, oh, I got to do a spot here. I'm going to go run to the Cellar. I'm going to go run to the Stand. Then I'm going to run to New York Comic Club. And then tomorrow I got 4 spots. And I'm going, okay. And you've been doing that shit for fucking 15 years.
Yeah.
So what's the end game? Where's the end game here? So yeah, you're getting cash everywhere. You're paying your rent. Do you want to do? See, me, it was always like, this year I'm going to do an album. Then a few years later, we're going to do this. Hopefully I get some acting. Then I'm going to do this. And hopefully, you know, like it was always stand up always first, but then other things, but you got to have that.
So you're a goals guy. Like what's your current
huge goals guy, dude? Huge.
What's your current goal? Your short-term goal, I guess.
Short-term goal right now is just to do, you know, which we are working on and doing. I got a ton of cities coming up, but I'm going to do a tour in 23 all over the United States.
Nice.
Working on the new hour, getting the new hour really sharper because I'd like to shoot something within like a year and 3 months.
Yep.
So kind of, you know, I have that 15-month, 18-month window of when the next one goes. So getting that right is a short-term. And then I would say, you know, acting here and there.
You like acting?
I like doing it on my terms.
Yeah, right.
I don't, you know what I mean? I'm not lining up to audition to be, but I like, you know, like I got a part, if a buddy called, hey, man, I got a series, I love to do this. Or, you know, and then also writing my own TV show, writing a TV series based on my life, based on my special. A lot of people think I, you know, should and could do that. So like doing that, working on the next hour, building my podcast even more in 23, because I have studio space in the city. So those are like the long-term and short-term. So I would say short-term would be the podcast growing and getting the new hour, right? And long-term would be slowly building a TV show and a little bit of an acting career.
Yeah. And do you find yourself, like, especially with the acting situation, were you ever the guy that went and did the auditions and sat through, like tried to learn the sides and all that, when sat down, bombed in the room, that kind of thing?
Dude, your questions are fucking great. By the way, am I allowed to curse? I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, you just did. Yeah, no. Oh, yeah. Be you. Yeah.
Yeah. I just did. I realized, like, I said it. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. I don't know if this is some, you know, Jeff Foxworthy.
Yeah, podcast. This is the Christian podcast. Yeah, we've already fucked it up. So there you have it.
Sorry if I made you lose a bunch of followers. Dude, I remember there was a show on FX. Bobby Kelly was in it. It was called Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll, Dennis Leary. And they were like, hey, man, I got you this audition. You're going to deliver a pizza delivering the pizza to Bobby Kelly's character, who was Bam Bam on the show. He was the drummer.
Okay.
And I'm supposed to go in and like kind of say I'm here for a pie, you know, deliver a pie to a Mr. Bam Bam and look confused and all that. And the guy supposed to get mad at me and everything. Like, dude, I go into this audition and I'm like, I'm going to nail this. So I got a Yankee hat on. Right. And I'm like, I'm going to be, that makes sense. I'm in New York or whatever. Yeah, right. I'm going to have a Yankee hat on, be delivering thing. And like, I'm nervous, dude. I had no acting experience. And I just walk in the room. And the first thing, there's two casting directors, a woman and a man. And they just go, yeah, can you take the hat off? Like, they didn't like that I came in with a hat. All right.
Oh, so now you're thrown off your game.
And not only am I thrown off my game, it's almost like that's strike one.
Yeah.
Right? I'm already behind the eight ball and shit, Charlie. So now I'm looking at them and she just goes, all right, when you do it, just look this way. The camera's here. Look this way. And like, I did the opposite. Like, I looked either at the camera or the, and they go, no, this way. And then I remember saying, like, I'm here to deliver a pizza to a Mr. Bam Bam. But like the way they go, no, when you say it, just say it like this. And I did it. And they go, okay, thank you, dude. It was literally like walk in and do everything they don't want, from the hat to looking wrong to not getting it the way they wanted it. And I remember leaving and it was like feeling like you bombed the set. Like, you know, because this is the thing. Comics can talk around this all they want. You know when you bomb, you know when you do okay. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we feel like we bombed when we did okay. Mm-hmm. Like that's one thing about me is I'll get off and be like, dude, was that all right? I literally will be like, dude, was that all right? And people were like, you genuinely killed. But for me, a killing is like a killing.
Yeah.
I want to demolish the room where everybody knows. But then there are times where you do a really good set. But to you, you're like, ah, I don't know. But when you bomb, you fucking kind of know, man, that was not how I wanted this night or this set to go. And when I did that audition for that show on FX, dude, I walked away and I just called my manager and I was like, wow, dude, that did not feel like it went okay.
Yeah. And did you get it? Because sometimes this story ends up, and then I got the part.
Oh, no, I didn't get it.
Yeah, yeah, dude. That was how every audition for me went. I don't know why. Something in my brain, like, it was almost like if I didn't write it, there was something like, I don't know if I didn't believe in it or I didn't. I'm just a bad actor, I think. If I didn't write it or create it, I'm bad at it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So, word to the wise. Excuse the interruption, ladies and gentlemen, but holy smokes, the holidays are here, and what better way to spread the holiday cheer than with Jolly Good Soda? That brandy old-fashioned cannot be sour without Jolly Good Sour Power. Get it now, jollygoodsoda.com. And folks, if you're also looking for something fun to put under the tree for your loved ones, get them some Duluth Trading Company gear. It's made so good, you only got to buy it once, so... And that, they really take pride in that. I went up there and visited them, and they're like, you know, our contribution with a lot of this, you know, because there's all these clothes floating around the ocean or whatever. They're like, we want to make stuff that people don't have to get rid of, you know, that it's going to last. It's going to be good. So check them out. DuluthTrading.com. And finally, folks, if you're looking for other clothes that are made to last, I'm wearing a Watch Out for Reindeer sweatshirt right now. It's perfect for your ugly sweater Christmas stuff. And we got a bunch of other stuff there on mandwalkman.com or cripescast.com. Just click on the merch section. We got coffee mugs and say, like, tell your folks I says hi. We've got these brand new Ope glasses for Brandy Old Fashions. And fishing lures from Grandpa Bob's Tackle Box and a bunch of other stuff. Check it out, mandwalkman.com or cripescast.com. And also, don't forget, you can get behind-the-scenes stuff and all that other jazz at patreon.com/charliebarons. Colleen,
you
did
got
I get
it, right.
I got it right. I was on a roll there.
Wow, yeah, I didn't even want to, like, break
my stride.
Way
nobody
to go.
Can hold me down. Oh, there no. I've got to keep her moving. Back to the Cripescast. How did having a family, how did that change your stand-up?
Everything, man. It was, yeah. It was, you know, I had a perspective on life now, you know, it wasn't about me. I had children that needed to do the right, you know, take care of. And I had all of these, like, you know, I had all of this responsibility, and I had a wife that was working full time. I didn't want to let her down, you know, because she's out there working. I'm trying to contribute with whatever cash and whatever shows I can contribute. We lived in small apartments before we got the house. And so it was like, I have something to talk about, man. I got a little, you know, boy at home, and I got a pregnant wife on the thing. So it was like, I kind of had this different perspective on life. I was evolving not only as a father, but as like a human, as a man.
Yeah.
And that allowed me to kind of talk about having kids. And it was kind of different because no comics at the time, or very few comics at the time, were. Not that I was a super young dad, but in the comedy world, like, you know, not many have. So I was able to talk about that. And then I started to develop material with it. And then I started to develop material that people can, with kids can relate to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I learned, it made me learn about, because there's a difference between doing kid material, like, oh, I hate changing diapers, the hacky, easy shit, versus something like if you saw my Netflix special and you saw the basketball story at the end with my son, where he challenged me for the first time, and people are like, whoa, and that's like a real story and a real cool thing, and it happens to be funny. So those jokes come when you talk about your family and your children and it's real and it happened. Like, yeah. your daughter saying something to you that you can't believe she said, or like in my first special where she cut my throat with the lightsaber,
yeah.
You know, because she said like she wanted to finish the job.
Yeah.
And like,
yeah.
So that's like going to be gold because it's real and nobody could take that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. That's not something anyone else can write. It's so specific to you and yet universally relatable. Just kids saying shit. You know?
100%.
Could you have done it without the family content, or do you feel like that started to define you as a comedian?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know how to answer that because I am somebody that is very, very competitive. I am somebody that will adapt. I am somebody that, like, if I have a goal and a dream, I'm going to keep going. I wanted to do this from a very young age. Eddie Murphy, you know, watching him as a 10-year-old boy and stuff, and then really loving stand-up. So I don't know if I can say I would or wouldn't have got this far. You know, I don't know that. I don't know because I think having a family sometimes made me go home where I couldn't maybe be in the city all the time, or I was always a Westchester guy living outside the city. So maybe had I not had the family, I lived in the city and I was able to kind of do spots like maybe spots I wouldn't normally do all the time, and maybe develop a different, I'm not going to say a different shtick or a different style, but maybe just, you know, go in a direction of somebody like me who came from a divorced home, had a really, saw a relationship go down in a not a cool way, have a very unique father situation. And, you know, and my mom remarried and I have siblings. So maybe I would have gone away of that. I really, that's another fantastic question. I don't know. I don't think that I wouldn't be here. I just think it might be different, but I will tell you this, man. I loved the party and hang, and I loved to have a beer, and I loved to be around that. And, you know, I don't know if I'd be chasing women until 4 o'clock in the morning, drinking, trying to hook up and trying to get people back to the apartment to have an after hours,
you know, right.
And do all that. And then all of a sudden, now you're this guy who's hung over all day. I mean, I'm not saying that I would do that all the time because I'm not an alcoholic or anything, but living in the city in your early 20s and you're not attached to anything, dude, that could also take things to another place. So
yeah.
I feel very fortunate that, you know, and I'm a big, I don't know. I mean, I'm not trying to, I don't know what you are or your listeners or whatever, but you know, I'm a big believer in destiny. I pray.
Yeah.
I pray. I'm a believer. I believe in God. I believe that we all have a path. I really do. So I feel like, you know, people my whole life have been like, man, you're lucky that worked out. I'm like, I don't know, man. I feel like something else.
Yeah.
You know?
No, so, I believe that too. Yeah.
So I think so. So I'm very fortunate that way, that to have be guided like this. And whether, you know, it's God or luck or both or whatever, but I feel like it worked out the way that it was supposed to.
That's awesome. I mean, and also at the time when you're kind of coming up, then are you doing like jobs in the city? Like what are you doing on the
I was doing sales. Yeah. Like at like 21 to 23, I was doing sales, dude. I was knocking phone, cable, internet, knocking doors in the city.
Yeah.
I was knocking on people's doors, dude, at dinner time in Queens and shit.
They come at dinner time. Jeez Louise. That wasn't your first gig. What was your first job?
My first job ever, I think I was 14, 15. I worked in a bakery.
You worked at a bakery? What were you?
I wasn't baking. I was just doing like the, either like taking up the dough or like whatever they needed me, you know, whatever they needed you to do.
Nice, dude. I was a pretzel roller for a while.
Oh, yeah. I worked in a pizzeria, but I didn't make pizzas. I was, dude, one of my best jobs ever. And even the guy said, he goes, dude, you suck in the store. He goes, but delivering pizzas, you are the fastest, dude. I was great. I would listen to sports talk radio. Yeah. I would smoke my cigarettes. I would get the food there super quick, get back. I loved it. I was just like, it was like my own little world, making cash.
Yeah, tipping. And then they eat the pizza and they're like, kind of tastes like Marby Reds, you know? what were your cigarettes back in the day?
I had three. So I started shitty with Newports, but then I went up to the ones that I had were, it was like Marlboro Medium.
Yeah.
And then there was Marlboro Medium, sometimes Marlboro Light. And then I think at the end, I was on Parliament.
Oh, the Parliament. That was your ease off. It was.
Yeah, it was like a little more sophisticated.
Yeah, right. I'm grown up now. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're doing that just odd jobs, and then you get to the point where you're like selling these internet
selling. Yeah, and it was like right when like fiber optics was a thing. So fiber optics. It was right when fiber optics allowed you to have your phone, cable, internet on the same bill.
Yeah.
I was able to like tell people, oh, we're bundling. So, and actually the company RCN in New York, it was actually a really good, still around. It was a really good like fiber optic digital company. So it was, I'm not going to say an easy sell, because anytime you're knocking doors at dinner, dude, it's like,
people got,
so they're like, get out of here. But no, I was like 20. I dropped out of college. My brother was a trainer for the company. So he got me a job there. And he's like, yeah, dude, you know, they're looking for door knockers and they're taking anybody that can do it. I think you can do it. You'd be good at it. So I was about to get fired, and then it clicked. And then I started to be really good at it. Then I made supervisor. But dude, I was like a 21-year-old, 22-year-old kid making over $50,000 a year. And I was trying to do stand up. So things were pretty cool.
Yeah, that's actually pretty good stand-up training right there. Knocking on a door on someone's house at dinner time. You got to make them not pissed off immediately, you know?
Yeah, that's actually true, yeah.
Let's talk about your podcast. How did you and Bill Burr link up?
So Bill, I opened for Bill early on. He saw me. He actually heard me killing once, and he was like, dude, I was downstairs. Was that you? Like, I heard it. And I was like, oh, you ripped. And then he recommended me to a room, and I did good at the room. And he goes, oh, I go, dude, I did really well. Thank you so much for putting my name there. And he goes, yeah. He goes, next time I'm there, I'll have you open. That was like 07. So I opened from 07. Wow. Then in 2008, he's like, hey, do you want to come to the Washington, D.C. Improv with me? And we just started to, like, you know, be really good friends. And now he's my son's godfather. We're super close. And then obviously when I broke off on my own, it was like bittersweet, you know, because I knew, I was like, look, man, I can't be doing opening for you anymore. And he's like, yeah, no, he's like, dude, you're getting like A-list headliner laughs now. Like, this is over. And I'm like, yeah, dude, I feel it. Like, I don't want to. And then I started to headline on my own, and I'm on the East Coast. He's on the West Coast. So we were both like sad, just because, dude, we would go to sporting events. We would talk together. Like, you know, he's like a, you know, he's a mentor too. He's like, you know, to me. So I think summer of the first year or second year of pandemic, he was like, hey man, give me a call. And he was like, dude, he's like, me and you, we always talked about it. And he reached out. He's like, well, we should do a podcast, you know, sports based or whatever. So we ended up doing that. And then we linked up with BetMGM for our NFL football picks. And then it's just become a weekly thing. And the nice thing is, since I don't work with him anymore, and since he's on two different coasts, but our families are so close, the podcast kind of lets us still have somewhat of touch together, you know?
That's awesome. And speaking of sports, by the way, we were initially trying to link up. I don't even know if you know this, in London, because I did the same thing. Packers fan. When I heard they were there, I was like, I'm going, I'm booking a show. And I think you did the exact same thing, didn't you?
Dude, I called my agent and I said that my Giants are playing the Packers on the 9th. Can you get me anything? And I don't hear anything for like a month. And then he goes, hey, dude, 21 Soho. It's going to be great. And we sold it out quick. So we added a Saturday show. I was on the NFL Network out there. I predicted the Giants to win, which I was kind of like, you know, didn't know, because I thought the Packers were going to turn it around, you know, but I was like, I think we got a shot because of Saquon, and ended up winning the game. So like, it just happened to be like a great trip. And then me and my family hopped on that bullet train and we went to Paris for 3 days.
Oh, that's, I've done that before. Aren't those trains awesome? We got to get trains like that over here, dude.
Dude, and we do. And it was like, we spent a little extra money and we had like a first class thing with, like, it was just all food.
Oh, did you get like a baguette or something? Bottle of wine?
They just kept bringing snacks and food and drinks and tea. And then all of a sudden you're in Paris. It was incredible.
Man, that's awesome.
It was incredible.
I love it. Did you freak out when you were under the water a little bit?
I try not to think about it.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
I freaked out a little bit.
I lied to myself and I was like, it's a tunnel. It's not like the thought of being engulfed in water and dying that way was not something I could...
It's like, you just got to think, this is just a long trip from Jersey to the city, you know? That's all it is. That's it.
Where are you from, man?
I'm from Wisconsin, Milwaukee.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Dude, I want to do my next special there.
Really?
Yeah.
What theater?
I would love to do Riverside.
No, that's where I filmed my special. It's beautiful, beautiful theater, dude. Beautiful.
Dude, and I love that green room and I love that elevator.
It's awesome. It's awesome. Yeah, you go all the way up to the 6th floor or the 7th, whatever, and they got that nice spread there, a barista up there. It's awesome.
Dude, it's an arcade.
Yeah. Oh, wait. You're thinking of Pabst Theater. Theater's got the arcade. Unless they hid the arcade from me at the Riverside.
Well, Riverside had like a couple of, like, it wasn't a crazy arcade. So maybe Paps has like a big one. The Riverside had like one or two games.
Yes. Okay. Sorry. I'm getting,
so I shouldn't have said arcade because I guess Milwaukee's big on having video games for their performers.
I know. It's kind of the thing. Well, dude, that would be awesome if you do it. You gotta let me know.
Oh, dude, absolutely. I love it.
Where can people, I know you got to run, where can people get tickets to see you on the road right now?
Yeah, so I got a big tour coming up. When does this come out?
It's going to come out a couple weeks, I think, something like that.
Yeah, so So I got New York City coming out February 2nd and 3rd. I have a bunch of stuff coming up in December. And then next year, January through like May, it's going to be a whole big 2023 tour. So you could check that out at paulvirzi.com. That's V-I-R-Z-I. And yeah, Nocturnal Admissions, man. It's on Netflix right now. It's doing very, very well. I feel very, very blessed and happy about that. So you could check that out. I do the Virzi Effect podcast. And the Anything Better podcast with Bill Burr. So, yeah, all this stuff. And my YouTube channel, subscribe to it, man.
And I appreciate you coming on and enjoy the time with the fam today.
And I'll tell you what, dude, I do these podcasts a lot, and there's people that I meet instantly that I'm like, all right, this will be a one and done. But you're somebody that I'm like, oh, I could hang with this guy, man.
Oh, thanks, you know? Man. I really appreciate that. Maybe we'll link up on the road, have a beer or something.
Dude, we'll have a beer on the road. We'll watch like football on a Sunday. It'll be great.
That'd be great. We'll watch the Packers hopefully not lose for the 8th time this season. So.
Dude, I've picked you guys so many times. All I do is pick you guys and people yell at me. Yeah. I know. But, you know, I don't hate the Packers. And I met Aaron Rodgers. He's a great dude.
Well, that makes me happy to hear. Hopefully we can win some freaking games.
Well, maybe he could stop playing. Maybe he could stop playing with his nipples and fucking get to it.
We'll leave it on that. Thanks, man. I appreciate you.
Later, Charlie.
All right. See ya. Well, that was fun. Make sure you follow Paul. Colleen, where can they follow Paul?
Follow Paul Virzi on all platforms. P-A-U-L-V-I-R-Z-I. He's on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and he's got a couple specials out there. He's got Nocturnal Admissions on Netflix. He's got his first debut special, Bill Burr Presents Paul Virzi, I'll Say This, on Comedy Central. He will be in Chicago in March, and he has a lot of other dates outside of the Midwest. So if you want to check out his tour dates in a city near you, go to paulvirzi.com. And he's also got a couple podcasts, The Virzi Effect and Anything Better, that he co-hosts with Bill Burr. So he's everywhere. Go check him out.
Check him out. And big thanks to Paul for coming on. Thank you to all of you for listening. Colleen, thank you for your work on the podcast. And shout out to Hannah, who is also editing this sucker. Thank you, Hannah. And yeah, everybody just keep her moving. Enjoy the holidays and watch for reindeer. Bye-bye.
So roll out the barrel and get the band brewing. Life's got you down, just keep her moving. It's on Wisconsin, the Badgers say it's the old Wisconsin Jubilee.
You know, sometimes when you're ice fishing, you put your foot into walleye hole and go ass over tea kettle and you think you're done. No, you gotta keep her moving.